Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the News Gazette for Monday, March 17th, 2025. I'm going to begin today's reading on the front page with Bob Asmussen's buzzer beater column, bracket edition, with the headline, "I Like Illini's Chances." Of course, we're talking about the NCAA tournament. And I will begin his column. From Illinois to the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee, thank you. The gift baskets with some of Champaign-Urbana's favorite treats are on the way. Nah, you probably can't post-bribe the judges, but in this case it would be appropriate. The inconsistent Illini, who got throttled in the Big Ten tournament by Maryland, drew a sweet path in the NCAA tournament. First off, the opening two rounds are in nearby Milwaukee, a short drive from CU, and even closer to the folks in Chicago. As a bonus, Illinois gets to play a tired opponent in Friday's opener. Texas and Xavier, who entered Sunday as serious bubble teams, play Wednesday in Dayton, Ohio. Yes, whoever survives between the Longhorns and Musketeers will be feeling good about themselves until the last 10 minutes and their legs feel like they just ran a marathon. I'm extremely confident projecting an Illinois victory. The second round game should be against Kentucky. The Wildcats were fine in the first year post John Calipari, but not at all frightening. In fact, mark Illinois down for a second win. Based on the way Illinois played all season, there were never going to be any guarantees of tournament success. But after the first glance at the bracket, there is a road for Illinois back to the regional final which it reached last season. It will take all the oars in the water at the same time. No off night allowed for Will Riley or rough shooting from Kasparis Giacosionis. Morez Johnson Jr. needs to be at his rousing best, and somebody from outside the main group needs to step up with a few big moments. Brad Underwood is good about making sure his guys focus on the task at hand. Talented Houston sits at the other end of the bracket, but who knows if the Cougars will make it to the final. The team must enjoy the experience and revel in the large number of fans who make the trip north. Remember, it isn't life or death. Relax, have fun, and pack a good pair of scissors for net cutting later. And also on the front page, we have a story by Scott Ritchie at the News Gazette with the main news that Illinois gets number 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. And there's a photo here of Illinois coach Brad Underwood directing his team from the bench during Saturday's game against Duke at Madison Square Garden in New York. And I'll begin. Illinois earned a number 6 seed in the NCAA tournament and will play its first round game Friday in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, against the winner of the first 4 game between Xavier and Texas. Those games are part of the Midwest region, meaning 2 wins, Kentucky or Troy, would wait in the second round, would mean a trip to Indianapolis. The Illini enter the NCAA tournament coming off a strong end to the regular season. That included 3 straight wins, including blowouts of Iowa and Michigan, as the response to a 3-game uncompetitive losing streak. The follow-up was an inconsistent and relatively brief stay in Indianapolis for the Big Ten tournament. Illinois put up 106 points in their second-round win game against Iowa, only to lose by 23 to Maryland in the quarterfinals after the Terrapins pulled their starters for a significant portion of the second half. And Xavier and Texas play on Wednesday. And let's see, we have the bracket on the front page here kind of taking shape. Also in basketball here on the front page of the News Gazette, in the weekend edition, we have a story about Mary Henson. And the headline is, "Their Biggest Fan, Mary Henson Dishes Out Assist to Hometown Team." And this is focused on the IHSA Boys Basketball State Tournament. When Mary Henson heard her hometown team was coming down for the IHSA Boys Basketball Tournament, she knew she had to meet them. That was Thursday, when the Eastland Cougars were already on the road and she had plans for lunch, afternoon bridge, and an Illini basketball watch party in the evening. The team had plans for dinner at the Ribeye, so she paid for their meal. That restaurant was a favorite spot for her and her late husband, legendary Illini basketball coach Lou Hansen. But she still wanted to meet the team for herself, and she learned they were free Friday afternoon. I said, "Well, would they like to come over and see the Illini room and just hang out for a while?" Hansen said. Hansen grew up and was homecoming queen in Lanark, which has consolidated with Shannon to form Eastland High School since she moved away. In many ways, the small town is still the place she remembers. Hansen spoke to each player as they arrived at her house, asking whom they were related to and seeing if she knew their families. In others, it's different. She told the team the Lanark Beavers sometimes saw Shannon as a rival team and said they'd shoot down the Eagles. "I'm just kidding. We would never do that to a protected bird," Hansen said. Eastland coach Tyler Zumdahl said the email from Hansen congratulating the team and asking to set up a meeting was a huge, exciting thing to get, and that this has all really added to the experience of the tournament. He also said that he's been hearing from folks around CU with ties to the Eastland area who were excited to hear about the meetup. You can tell what she means to the community because people were like, "This is so cool. I'm going to wait to tell somebody in person because I want to see their reaction," Zumdahl said. Most of the players weren't really familiar with Lou Hansen and his legacy, so Zumdahl and the rest of the staff made sure to educate them on the drive down. One player, senior guard Peyton Spears, said his grandparents went to school with Mary Hansen and were friends with her, but he only heard about that for the first time this weekend. Either way, he said the team was very appreciative of her covering their meal and inviting them into her home. "It's kind of great to see what people have come from my hometown, like we're 3.5 hours away and seeing how successful someone can be from our town," Spears said. Hansen told the whole team she was proud to have met them and that they should be proud of where they were. "This is a time in your life that you will absolutely treasure forever because it's just something that doesn't happen all the time. And when it does, it's just great," Hansen said. She said her husband loved his time coaching high school more than any other coaching he did because he enjoyed watching his young players really improve and go on to become great at the game. Eastland ensured Mary Hansen would have tickets to their championship game today, which she believes will be her first time seeing a high school game since Lou stopped recruiting. Hansen will have more to share as a guest on next week's edition of WDWS's Monday Night Sports Talk, aired live at 5 p.m. from the Esquire Lounge in downtown Champaign. And there's a photo in this story here of Mary Hansen speaking to the Eastland Cougars from her hometown of Lanark during their visit to her home Friday in Champaign. And they ensured she has tickets for today's Class 1A State Championship at State Farm Center. And I'm going to move on to a story here with the headline, "City May Seek Demolition of Some Units." This is by Jana Wiersema. After 2 years of maintenance issues, court hearings, and condemnations, the city now feels that some of the buildings in the Champaign Park Apartments complex may be past the point of being saved. The city has amended its legal complaint to include demolition counts, alleging that the conditions of the buildings on the property are beyond reasonable repair. City Attorney Thomas Yu wrote in a report, adding that the case will go to trial in August. Mayor Deb Finan told the News Gazette that the city is still in the discovery phase and has not yet determined which buildings are not salvageable. "I think it's important to have safe, clean, affordable housing for people in our community," she said. Champaign Park Apartments has not been doing that for most of its residents, and I'm relieved that the city has been actively pursuing legal avenues to resolve the issues, she said. According to you, the complex contains a total of 29 buildings and 504 units. It's been a source of frustration for city officials for over 2 years. In the winter of 2022, boiler failures left many residents without heat, you said. The city paid for temporary emergency housing for displaced individuals and has received reimbursements pursuant to a court order. Over 40 Champaign Park Apartment Tenants contacted the city from October 2022 to date to request a tenant inspection due to a concern with their apartment, which was most frequently no heat, water, or sewage backup, Yu said. As a result of these inspections, the city had contact with over 70 households who were relocated to temporary housing in hotels while their apartment was condemned. Neighborhood Services Director Rob Kolowski said in a previous interview that probably less than 10% of the complex's units are occupied, and most of the buildings are vacant and condemned. The city is currently in the middle of a legal battle with the complex's owner over outstanding violations. On November 1, 2024, the court entered an order requiring the property owner to secure vacant structures, timely pay water and sanitary sewer invoices, maintain adequate trash service, maintain boilers in good condition, permit city inspections of occupied units, provide rent rolls, and relocate tenants of uninhabitable units, Yu said. From time to time, the city has obtained injunctive relief and sanctions based on the property owner's failure to comply with the order. The city council will vote Tuesday on whether to amend its contract with Elrod Friedman, LLP, to increase the not-to-exceed amount from $100,000 to $600,000. Council members will also consider a bill allocating $500,000 from the general fund for this purpose. The council originally voted in December 2023 to retain the Chicago-based firm to help the city prosecute the lawsuit. The proposed increase would cover its new request for the firm to retain experts in structural engineering, construction, and appraisal to evaluate building conditions, Yu said. These experts will inspect each building thoroughly, write reports on the code violations, and estimate how much it would cost to bring each building into compliance, and are also likely to be cross-examined during the depositions and trial. Buildings in the Champaign, that's the end of the story there, and there is a photo of the buildings, the Champaign Park Apartments buildings. And moving on here, we do have a question for Kathy's mailbag. And the question is, South Murray Road at County Road 1500 East in Rantoul goes past the sports complex. It's a newer road down to 2900 North. Then it turns into a single-lane blacktop that's rough and narrow until it connects to US 45. Are there plans to widen and resurface it? And Rantoul Public Works Director Jake McCoy says the village has taken responsibility for maintaining that stretch of South Murray between 2900 North and Chandler Road at 2800 North. At this time, the blacktop segment of the road is not within the village's corporate limits, even though the village maintains it. McCoy said improvements are on the way, and they are tentatively planned to begin in spring 2026. We're going to put in a 1 or 2 inch overlay, resurface the road. We'll probably have to till up parts of it, and then we're going to add shoulders to it, he said. So it's going to be widened to some degree, but it's not going to be like that 3-lane road north of 2900 North. It's ours to take care of, but we actually don't own the right-of-way yet, he said. Up there near the sports complex, we own the right-of-way, making it more easily developable. Right now, we don't have the funds to upgrade the blacktop to a wider three-lane concrete road to match the pavement that runs along the east side of the Rantoul Family Sports Complex. Longer term, if we had a developer come in there and say, hey, we'd like to put in 400 homes or another sports complex or something like that, we would definitely consider putting in a three-lane road, he said, especially if the developer were willing to contribute funds towards such a project. We have a few more questions in Kathy Reiser's mailbag. I'm going to do another two or so here. We have the next question is, will the new division that oversees the U of I Arboretum and Allerton Park be investing in and improving the Arboretum? Will they restore some of its gardens that have lain fallow for years now? Derek Peterson, Executive Director of the University's new Division of Parks and Natural Spaces, said yes, there are plans to improve the Arboretum and restore some of the gardens there. Similar to what we have focused on at Allerton over the last decade, we will rely on individual donations and community support to make those improvements happen, he said. The charge given to the new division is to preserve the U of I's parks and natural spaces for community health and wellness, educational and recreational activities, and research by acquiring, maintaining, and restoring these increasingly rare and valuable resources, Peterson said. So the people involved in executing that charge are planning for the long-term use of those outdoor spaces and associated facilities, not just one growing season at a time. In the short term, over the next 2 to 3 years, Peterson said work in the U of I Arboretum will focus on improving iconic physical space, including the Hartley Selections Garden, creating connections between the spaces, partnerships, and increased communication and presence with the community and donors. Does this mean visitors can expect the Hartley to be manicured and in full bloom this season? Unfortunately, no. I have no plans to alter the current state of the Hartley this growing season, he said. Longer-term plans are needed. Like most good things, patience will be required as we work through this transition, he added. Moving on to another question here, we have another one here, which reads, when traveling from Champaign to Monticello on Interstate 72, we've noticed a cornfield with large plastic-covered boxes in it. What is in the containers, and why are they just sitting out in a field between the interstate and Bondville? I keep hearing that for fall, most shows and sports will only be available via streaming services, most of which required paid subscriptions. Is that true? This question is for about the streaming one. I'm not sure about the Bondville and the corn boxes, but I'm going to read the answer to the sports and streaming. So the answer to that one is, of course, sports fans are frustrated when video play-by-play of their favorite team's games is available via paid streaming service only. Looking at you, Peacock. A team's games may run on multiple paid streaming services over the course of the season. Those costs can add up quickly, especially if fans forget to cancel their subscriptions. But I have not heard anything about major networks moving their TV series exclusively to a paid streaming model later this year or in the near future. We have no reason to believe that network shows belonging to the biggest broadcast networks would become streaming only, said Harsh Dineja, associate professor of new and emerging media at the University of Illinois. At least not just yet. Broadcast and cable TV is very much alive and will be in fall 2025. However, it isn't thriving, which is another topic for another time. He said concerns about linear TV received via broadcast or cable being completely supplanted by streaming are neither new nor unfounded. Many TV viewers have been cutting the cord, getting rid of cable satellite, and at this point, cord cutting is a phenomenon that is at least 15 years old. Yet we are in 2025 and still have both broadcast and cable TV running, he said. In the last 5 years, streaming has also adapted to increasingly invest in news and live sports, the two genres that still provided linear TV a value proposition over streaming. So slowly but surely, streaming is becoming the preferred method of watching television, and increasingly, there is little content that's not available on streaming. Slowly but surely, the trend is that all content is migrating to become available on streaming, and on occasion, exclusively so. That said, a switch away from free network television would require buy-in not just from viewers, but also advertisers. The latter have been slower to shift their advertising dollars from linear television to streaming, he said. This is in part because, unlike Nielsen ratings, which for 75 years have helped advertisers and networks negotiate advertising prices, the industry is not yet to settle on similar currency for streaming. Being unable to monetize as effectively through ads, most streaming services require paid subscriptions. However, if and when all content becomes exclusive to streaming, it's unlikely that everything will require a subscription, he said. Tanasia said many networks have started providing content through free, ad-supported television, a streaming analog of free-to-air broadcast television. Netflix, which swore to never run ads, in the recent past has started an ad-supported tier with cheaper subscription, he said. Broadcast networks would likely have free tiers of their streaming services. For example, the latest Super Bowl simultaneously ran on Fox Network and Tubi, the company's free streaming service. When I drove by earlier this week to see what the reader was talking about, my first thought was, and this next this next section is the answer to the question about what was on I-72 with the large plastic covered boxes. And so the answer to that one is, when I drove by earlier this week to see what the reader was talking about, my first thought was solar panels. And indeed, Champaign County Zoning Administrator John Hall told me a solar array with a data center has been proposed for that site and has received special use permit approvals, but a zoning use permit is necessary to build. The developer is still working on receiving zoning use permit approval, and I anticipate that a zoning use permit may be approved any day. Hall did not mention the name of the property, Donato Solar, which has built several other solar arrays with data farms in and around Champaign-Urbana over the past few years. And here's another question, a shorter one. I didn't hear much about unofficial St. Patrick's Day at the U of I this year. Is that still a thing? These days, the annual drinking festival promoted by bars near the University of Illinois is just another weekend on campus, said Abby Kep, communications coordinator for the U of I Police Department. The activity level this past weekend was similar to other busy weekends, and the first stretch of nice weather after winter may have played a role in that, she said. While some bar patrons wore green, the large-scale, high-risk behavior of the past has significantly declined thanks to the dedicated efforts of local leaders, businesses, and law enforcement. We're always happy to see students and visitors safely and responsibly enjoying the campus town area year-round. As for participation from students from other campuses, we don't track that data. I'm moving on to page A8 here in the paper. We have an Urbana Police focused story with the headline, 2-month-old dies after four-car wreck. And this is by Jana Wiersema. An infant has died from injuries sustained in a four-vehicle accident Thursday evening in southeast Urbana. A release from Urbana Police said the 2-month-old was taken to Carle Foundation Hospital by ambulance, transferred to the St. Louis Children's Hospital, and later passed away. The death is being investigated by the St. Louis Medical Examiner's Office. Police said officers were called at 5:52 p.m. Thursday to a four-vehicle wreck at the intersection of Philo Road and Colorado Avenue and arrived to find personnel with the Urbana Fire Department treating occupants of the affected vehicles. According to the release, a GMC Envoy was headed east on Colorado and failed to stop at the intersection with Philo, clipping a northbound Subaru Outback that was turning west onto Colorado. The Envoy then hit a Chrysler Pacifica that was headed north on Philo in the middle of the driver's side sliding door, behind which the 2-month-old was sitting in a car seat. The Envoy then flipped, slid through the rest of the intersection, and collided with a Chevy Equinox headed west on Colorado. The infant's two siblings, who were also in the van, and her mother, who was driving, were all taken to Carle, treated, and released. The exact injuries to all parties are still being investigated, police said. The driver of the Envoy, Cartilla Brooks of Champaign, was also taken to Carle and was issued citations for disobeying a stop sign and operating an uninsured motor vehicle. The latter is a Class A misdemeanor when bodily harm occurs, police said. The investigation is ongoing, and officers are still canvassing the scene for witnesses and video footage. Anyone in the area with video surveillance systems or more information about the accident is encouraged to contact police at 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for information to be shared privately. And those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of $5,000 for tips that lead to an arrest in any homicide, $2,500 for tips leading to an arrest in a felony crime involving a firearm, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to the arrest of those responsible for any other crime. I'm going to wrap it up here with Beyond the Boardroom. This is editor Jeff D'Alessio's weekly chat with a local boss about leadership, management style, and more. He's from Portland, Oregon, with its sprawling forest, sparkling river, and spectacular mountain views everywhere you turn. She's from Champaign, which lacks all of the above. But it didn't take long for Heather Stout's partner to take to CU after moving here in the summer of 2023, when she was appointed Director of Disability Resources and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. And it says, after our first event at Krannert, shortly after we both moved here, we spoke to a French woman sitting next to us who raved about life here and exclaimed it is her wish to die on the prairie. Stout says, I'd like to think that that was Michael's introduction to this wonderful community. For the Urbana-born, centennial-educated Stout, it's her second homecoming. After finishing her undergraduate studies at Penn State, she returned to CU for her master's in rehabilitation counseling, and after a career working elsewhere in the disability resources field of higher ed, most recently at St. Louis University, she's back where it all started. The West Urbana resident took time out to answer questions from editor Jeff D'Alessio. In this 272nd installment of our weekly speed reading Spotlight Leaders of Organizations Big and Small. So it starts with the first question. This I can't live without my connection to Pittsburgh. My parents are from Pittsburgh, and it feels like a second home to me. Growing up, extended family was in Pittsburgh, as were most family gatherings. As a child, I observed my grandfather listening to Pirates games on the radio. I am a Pirates, Steelers, and Penguins fan through and through. My last trip to the area was June of last year and included a game at PNC Park and visiting the still-standing back wall of Old Forbes Field. My philosophy on meetings is they can be extremely useful. Sometimes we need a structured agenda and other times an open, less structured agenda to foster discussion and collaboration. However, time is precious. I try to honor that. I also offer everyone an opportunity to contribute. The hardest thing about being a leader is there are times when our role is to make decisions for the organization. Leaders collect information and feedback across the organization to help inform decisions. The role of a leader is to move an organization forward and keep it strong. I value team discussion above many things. I keep the vitality and strength of the organization in the forefront of my decision making. At times, I'm required to make a decision that may or may not be liked by all. As far as my favorite moments in this profession go, there are lots of favorite moments, many involving students. I feel my work is most impactful when a student embraces disability as their lived experience, their truth. To share in such transformative moments fuels my passion for working in this field. I worked with a student earlier in my career who was deaf and new to discussing capital D deafness. He decided to study American Sign Language in graduate school. Over the course of his studies, he began to focus on the deaf experience. He transformed from a student who inquired about deaf resources into an individual who identified as capital D deaf. Work with students reminds me about the impact our work can have while fueling a passion for disability culture and access. On my office walls, you'll find images of the University of Illinois and the St. Louis Arch, a terrible towel, a Troy Polamalu meme, a Just Do It poster in American Sign Language, an autographed photo of the 2018 U.S. Paralympic sledge hockey team, a painting of a brain by a St. Louis University alumna artist, and a quote from Frank Zappa. Without deviation from the norm, progress is not possible. I'm frugal in that I had a favorite suit jacket that I wore until the elbows had visible worn patches. I absolutely loved the jacket and kept it for years, even after confirming it could not be repaired due to the fragility of the fabric. When it comes to the one person in town I wouldn't mind trading places with for a week, I have this dream that in retirement I'll get to tend plants at a nursery with large greenhouses. Therefore, an easy answer. I would trade places with someone who tends plants at a nursery. Perhaps Country Arbor's Nursery. And I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Monday, March 17th, 2025, shortly. Please stay tuned.